So I think I will begin now. I know people are still going to be trickling in. My name is Lydia White. I'm the Associate Provost in charge of several things, but including policies, and the policy that we're going to be talking about today is relating to all sorts of things, including promotion. I want to introduce two other people in the room. Natalie Cook at the back, who's just come in, another of the Associate Provosts, who deals with many different aspects of the life of academic personnel. And I'd like to introduce Bonnie Bornstein. Maybe you can stand up. Bonnie is the person in the secretariat who will be dealing with promotion files at the final stage of the process, which I'll be describing in due course. So what I'm going to do is make a presentation going through certain issues, and then there will be a question and answer and discussion section at the end. Let me mention that today I am concentrating on promotion to professor and not promotion to librarian. There are a lot of areas where these overlap, but there are some differences which I will address not today, but separately for the librarians at some point. So basically what I'm hoping to do is to clarify the procedures and requirements for promotion, especially in the light of, you may not be aware, but earlier this year, new regulations relating to the employment of tenure-track and tenured academic staff were passed. Now, in many cases, these are just revisions of the previous regulations, but what I did to this new set was to add a whole section on promotion. The idea is to make the whole process and requirements more available to everybody. They were kind of rather meager in the previous set. So if you haven't yet got the regulations, you can download them from the Secretariat web page. And also, the Secretariat has specific guidelines for a promotion dossier once it gets as far as the last stage, and those are also available on their website. So one thing people sometimes ask about, there is no specified timing for promotion consideration. So it's a sort of rolling process. However, there are some faculties, certainly the Faculty of Medicine, has a promotion committee that meets, I think, a couple of times times in the year. So that faculty may have promotion deadlines, but most faculties do not. And certainly at the level that's handled by the Secretariat, the level of a statutory selection committee, these are convened as needed and not according to specific dates. So another thing about timing is that a staff member, provided they are an associate professor, can be recommended for consideration at any time, including, right after getting tenure, if the department chair feels that that's appropriate. If you've held the rank of associate professor for a minimum of 5 years, you can request that your department consider you. And let me say that the second one, this is the normal route to go, and I'm going to describe the route. It says a minimum of 5 years, but you could have been an associate professor for 20 years. It's still the normal route is to go through your department first, but there is a mechanism. If you've been an associate professor for at least 10 years and for whatever reason you think that the normal route that I'm going to describe is not viable in your case, you can make a direct request to the principal to be considered. I'll describe that process towards the end. It's actually very unusual for people to take advantage of this last possibility. So most people go through the process I'm about to describe. So criteria for promotion are based on academic duties, and these are the same academic duties that are requirements for tenure. So your research and related activities, teaching of various kinds, and other contributions which we tend to call service, but are never called service in any of the regulations. But for promotion to full, in particular, you need to demonstrate a record of excellence in research and related activities as evidenced by international recognition by peers. In a moment, we'll go through what some ways in which you might show such recognition. Record of high quality teaching and substantial record of other contributions. Notice that we're avoiding use of terms like superior and reasonable. Those are the terms that are used for tenure, but you don't have to get a word assigned to your record. It's rather that you have to demonstrate these things in your dossier. So I'm just going to go through some ways, because some people have said, well, how do I show international recognition? And I'm sure there are going to be many more ways. Some of you may be able to suggest more. This is a partial list. So obviously, publications in international journals, success in getting grants, awards and honors, you're an editor or an editorial board member of a journal in your field. You've organized conferences and the like. You've been an invited speaker at conferences. You're involved in the professional organization of your field. By the way, these slides will be made available for you to download after this session. So due diligence, this is what it says in the regulations. It's the responsibility of candidates to prepare and pursue the case for promotion. And I think what you should read into this also is, don't wait for somebody to come and ask you to be considered for promotion. Go and talk to your chair or director and say, you know, I'm interested in going forward. What do you reckon? Am I ready yet? I mean, so you should think about initiating some conversations. However, we also think that it's the responsibility of chairs to provide guidance to you on whether and when it's appropriate for promotion to be considered. So responsibility on both sides here. Now, the dossier, let me say from the outset that certainly the statutory selection committees, which are the last committees to look at a promotion, have been somewhat horrified in recent years by dossiers that are, you know, this thick. And we are trying to cut down on the amount of paper or e-paper that you need to prepare. And I think, indeed, I know a lot of associate professors who say just the idea of putting together a big dossier is so, not necessarily intimidating, but time-consuming, that people put off asking for promotion consideration. So we really are working on letting people know, letting faculties, departments, and individuals know that we're trying to cut down on the amount of paper justification of your dossier. This isn't to say that we're reducing the requirements, but there are ways and ways of demonstrating things without quite as much paper as has been done in the past. So the first thing you need, and the most important thing, or there are two very important things. One is a personal statement from you, which covers your contributions to the three main areas of academic duties. And the other is your CV, including a list of publications. And you may have other materials that you would like to submit, and these can go into your dossier. And by the way, unlike for tenure, where there are strict limits on when you can add stuff, for promotion, you can actually add stuff to your dossier while it's going through the process. So you can add other materials if you want to. Now, I want to say something about the teaching portfolio, because in the old regulations, you for promotion were required to produce a teaching portfolio, and this is no longer the case. Nevertheless, you might want to look at the guidelines for developing a teaching portfolio in the new set of regulations. These guidelines for everybody, tenure candidates in particular, have also been reduced so that people are not having to produce quite such a large teaching portfolio as was the case. But what the advantage to you of looking at the guidelines is that it gives you some sense of what issues you should be covering in your statement. But you're not expected to put together an enormous package justifying all of your teaching activities. But you certainly need to explain them and give some backup, but no longer a portfolio. And then you can add appendices. A fairly obvious set of appendices is a selection of your publications. but you might have other things that you feel should be part of your dossier. Now, as to publications, so we don't specify this in the regulations, and this is because there's enormous variation across the university as to whether copies of publications should be included. Usually they are expected, but also how many. Is it a selection? I think nobody wants your total life's publication record. It doesn't make the dossier like this. But let me draw to your attention, it seems to me that the lower the committee, the more likely they are to be interested in your publication. So your department, that they're going to be the closest to experts in your field, the faculty somewhat, and the statutory selection committee does not look at publications. They look at the record, but not at the actual publications. Oh, I'll add a point about publications. So, whereas articles, it's now pretty well standard, and we would urge you to be preparing these as PDF documents. For those of you in disciplines where books are part of your dossier and you want, perhaps especially the externals, to get those books, you will obviously have to, I mean, unless you happen to have an e-book, you will have to check with your department or faculty as to how they want to handle books. The statutory selection committees, again, they will not be looking at books, so at that level it doesn't matter. So there are various things that are going to be added to your dossier by other people after you've done your part of it. There will be three or more external evaluator letters, and it's this is, again, different from tenure. For promotion, it's your dean who gets those letters. For tenure, it's the secretariat. The chair of your department will be adding a written recommendation, in fact, a report of the departmental promotion committee to your dossier. So your dossier and the departmental report go to the dean, who then solicits the external letters. And then the dean, or if there's a faculty committee, it could be the chair of that committee, will make a recommendation based on the external letters, your dossier, and your department's report. And that will go forward in a way that I'll explain in a moment. So the external evaluators, unlike tenure, for promotion we're asking for a list of six names, not eight. If you look at the old forms, it said eight, but the regulations always said six. You draw up this list with your chair, and it's got to be a list of people who are suitable, able to provide an evaluation of your scholarship, and are of recognized standing and qualified to provide an evaluation. So I would say typically these people should in fact be full professors, but there will be cases where they won't be. And as for tenure, you have to provide a justification. So if they're not full professors, you can explain why they're nevertheless suitable. And obviously they must not be in a conflict of interest with you. So the list that you and your chair have put together is submitted to the dean, and it's the dean who solicits the letters. There are three levels of review, and the committee membership is fixed at the top level, but for the first two levels it can vary in the following way. So departmental promotion committee, the membership of such committees is determined by the department, and we know that departments vary enormously in who they allow to be on this committee. So in my department, linguistics, associate professors and full professors are on this committee, but we know of departments where only full professors are on the committee. So you need to find out what your department, what their requirements are, or who are members of the departmental promotion committee. Then at the faculty level, so in some faculties it is just the dean who makes the next stage of assessment. That several faculties have faculty advisory committees, faculty promotion committees, with membership determined by the faculty. Sorry, in neither of these cases do I mean to imply that the membership is determined on an ad hoc basis. Most departments and faculties will have, and if they haven't, they should have, a sort of known means by which committee membership is determined. And then the statutory selection committee, so this is the final committee that will assess you. It's a committee that's advisory to the principal. So in a sense, the department's giving advice to the dean. The dean's giving advice to the statutory selection committee, and that committee's giving advice to the principal. And the membership of the SSC, the provost chairs this committee. And other members include two members of the Board of Governors, one vice principal or delegate, the dean of the faculty that you're in, two members selected by Senate, and other such members as the principal sees fit, and typically the department chair is included, and then the secretariat provides a secretary to the committee. So let's just go in a bit more detail through the levels of review. So if you have indicated that you'd like to be considered, or your chair has suggested to you that you should be, and you've submitted your dossier, the Departmental Promotion Committee will meet to consider the dossier. And where they're making, they intend to make, or they do make, a favorable recommendation to the dean, they submit a report to the dean, and this is supposed to happen within 3 months of having received your dossier. Where the promotion committee declines to recommend you, they should give you written reasons again within 3 months. So next level up, the dean receives that positive recommendation, and may, if there is a faculty advisory committee, consult them, or if there isn't, the dean acts on his or her own. But the dean's task is to recommend the establishment of the university-level committee. And so the dean, as I've now said several times, solicits the external letters, and obviously has to provide the externals with the dossier. So this is where, if you've got books, you need to check how your faculty wants to handle them, because it's here that they may have to be sent out to externals. I must say, when I act as an external for people in other universities and they ask me what I want, I always say I don't want anything, I've already got it. And I don't know to what extent it's typical for people to ask the externals in advance, because it's often the case that they will already know your research and have access to some of the documentation. So if the dean recommends the establishment of an SSC, the dean's going to make a written recommendation, and what the dean's going to forward is that recommendation and everything else that he's received, and the dean will be forwarding the external letters to the Secretary General. So again, the Dean has up to 3 months to make a recommendation. And if the Dean declines to recommend, up to 3 months to explain in writing why. When the Secretariat gets a positive recommendation, this is the last step, the Secretary General informs the Dean and the candidate that indeed a statutory selection committee will be set up. The candidate then is asked to deposit the dossier with the Secretary General, and crucially, at least by this point, the dossier must be in electronic form. We strongly encourage you to have it electronic all the way, but the Secretariat is only going to accept, with the exception of books, is only going to accept electronic forms of the dossier. And when I finish speaking, I may ask Bonnie to say a few words about the current formatting of that dossier. You can, as I said, you can always add stuff. So if you've got anything more to say at this stage in the process, you could add an addition to your statement or whatever. The idea is that within 30 working days, the Secretary General will convene a statutory selection committee. This committee meets to consider the candidate's case, and if it makes a positive recommendation, in fact, at the meeting, the dean or the chair will be given permission to tell the candidate that their promotion request has been successful. An official letter will follow, but you are allowed to be told as soon as the committee has decided. But that committee actually has to make a recommendation to the principal and the Board of Governors, so you only get your letter after that. And promotion takes place effective from the first day of the month after the board approved your promotion. If the recommendation is negative, again, you get written reasons. It's practically unheard of for a file to get all the way through to here and then have a negative decision. What I want to talk about now is this other route. So as I've been explaining, the normal route is first your department considers you, then your faculty, and then a statutory selection committee. However, there is this provision that if you've been a tenured associate professor for at least 10 years, and you reasonably believe that your departmental promotion committee is not the right way to go, you can apply once for direct consideration by a statutory selection committee. But I should point out to you that even in such cases, although it's not crucial, and I put tenure committee, that should say promotion, the Departmental Promotion Committee and the faculty are nevertheless asked if they want to give input. So the steps in these cases are as follows. You make a request to the principal, you deposit your dossier, and you have to give reasons why you want to bypass your department. So you have a statement explaining why you want to go this route. And then instead of the dean establishing the list of names with you, it's the provost or delegate, it would probably be me. It's the provost's office that will solicit the letters. The Departmental Promotion Committee will be asked if they want to make a recommendation. They don't have to. And so will the dean. But the crucial thing here is going to be the meeting of the Statutory Selection Committee, right? Because they are deciding this possibly without recommendations from the two levels below. So as I said, this is a very unusual process. And if at all possible, you should go through the normal process. So just to conclude, we strongly encourage you to talk to your chairs and directors about the possibility of promotion. And we encourage chairs and directors to mentor associate professors. Don't wait for them to come and talk to you. Talk to them about prospects, possibilities, realistic timing, and so on. And another thing, if any of you are here representing your departments or faculties, you need to check that any internal requirements you have are consistent with the university requirements, particularly with the new Section 8 in the regulations. Because it's our impression, it's not to say that departments and faculties can't have certain criteria and expectations, but they shouldn't be, you know, they should be consistent with the ones that are in the regulations. If you need any help in interpreting any aspect of the regulations, I'm the person you should contact. And if you need any help with procedural issues relating particularly to what must be submitted to the Secretariat, then Bonnie, who's sitting back there, and Bonnie will can also speak about formatting, she is the person you should be contacting in the Secretariat. So that's all that I want to say. Maybe, Bonnie, you could just say something briefly about formatting. There's a mic up there, and then we'll open it up to general discussion.
Hello? Is it on?
Yeah.
Okay. Just to say, as was mentioned before by Lydia, if we can have all submissions electronically, they should be in PDF format. It should be one file. I haven't seen very many with a table of contents, but it would be useful because there are a variety of different documents in this one file, so a table of contents would be ideal. And if you could compress the file, so when you create this PDF, you save as in a compressed format because it would be easier for all parties to download that way.
Okay, so over to you. Any questions, comments, concerns, anything we can do to help you? Yes.
Are departments required to have written guidelines?
This is an interesting question because for reappointment and tenure, they are, and for promotion, We're sort of silent on this. And I'd actually welcome feedback as to whether you think this would be useful or not. But at the moment, they're not required. Because at a previous meeting quite recently, when I suggested, wouldn't this be a good idea, somebody commented that sometimes departments are, in a sense, they write something down, it's actually raising the bar extremely high, and then the trouble is it's written down. It's just harder to maybe change. But on the other hand, it makes things clearer for you if you know what your departmental expectations are. So one can see arguments both ways. But there's no requirement in the regulations.
Yes. You said that you have to have been an associate professor for 5 years, a minimum of 5 years before you apply. When is that 5 years applying? Like, if I'm, say, borderline, is it when my department is considering me, or is it when my dossier will actually be...
I don't know that we've had cases that are where it matters that much. If it does come down to mattering that much, it should be 5 years from the day that you got tenure. Right, so that's the day that you became...
But that's when I'm allowed to submit, or...?
Let me go back and say that your department can decide at any time that you should go up for promotion. For example, I was promoted only 2 years after tenure. That's fairly unusual, but not totally unusual. There's nothing in the university regulations that says anything about it must be 5 years, it must be 10 years. What it says is that after 5 years, you can initiate the request. Okay. And before 5 years, your department can initiate the request, obviously with your agreement, right? They can't put you up for promotion and they haven't checked with you. And then there are people, so there are, at the other end, there are people, you know, I have colleagues who waited maybe 20 years or more. It's not a barrier to have been an associate professor for 20 or 25 years. The point is, can you, at the point of application for promotion, demonstrate that you've met the criteria? It doesn't matter if it's taken you 2 years or 25. Yes.
In the case of joint appointments?
Yes, I didn't mention joint appointments, but basically, For joint appointments now, we require everything to be done with both units contributing. So you can't have one of your departments saying, yes, we want this person to be promoted, and the other department saying no. And what's more, they shouldn't have separate committees. There should be, I think this is now clear in the regulations, there should be a joint departmental promotion committee, and if you are in two different faculties, then both deans have to get together and agree. Yeah, good question, and it's getting more and more common. Yeah. Yes.
Can you talk about the implications of promotion? In other words, why bother?
Why bother?
Apart from, you know, the glory of a title.
Okay, so why bother? Indeed, we get asked this question a lot. Well, you said apart from the glory, but actually that's quite important. And if you are a presence, outside of McGill, you're giving talks, you're collaborating in research, you're doing all sorts of things where it looks better to be a professor than an associate professor. The other, you do get a bonus, a salary bonus that gets added to the base budget. And don't just think about it as $5,000, because this, it adds to everything that's related to salary and benefits, retirement. So there is a financial reward. Natalie, do you want to add anything on this one?
Some disciplines. I mean, it gives you access to some very nice conferences for full professors, and it gives you certain privileges in terms of visiting other institutions. There are a number of particular fellowships and things that are offered for the full professor level. So that's the other. It's interesting. We had two very different reactions from when we met with SHRC associate professors. We had that question. We met with NSERC and CIHR professors, and the gist of it was, why would you not go forward full professor? So I think sometimes it's very discipline specific.
I think there's also a perception, which I'm not sure how true it still is, that if you become a full professor, you'll be asked to sit on more committees. It's my impression, and could there be more than you're already sitting on? It's my impression this isn't true anymore. In other words, associate professors are sitting on at least as many, if not more. There are very few committees that require full professors. So I think that one has sort of is a non-issue now. Yes?
I have a question about if indeed you've been in the international stage, it's likely that you have.
Just realized I'm supposed to give.
Sorry.
Yes.
I think my voice is carrying that.
Well, it's being recorded.
I'll try to speak softly. Okay. It's likely that a number of us have been on a review paper with an extensive list of authors, which starts, how do we deal with external reviewers when all the best people in your field likely were publishing with you?
yes, and of course that's a real problem, because that would count normally as a conflict of interest, so you can't put those people on the list. However, if it's one of those cases where you've each contributed, but actually you've had nothing, to do with each other, it's a sort of multiple contribution, and if you really can't find other people, I think you just have to explain, you can choose the name and then explain in detail in your justification as to why that would be okay. The other thing is, there is a time frame here. So supposing you were a co-author with somebody and it's more than 5 or 6 years ago, then it's not deemed to be a conflict of interest anymore. Yeah, that's an interesting problem.
How much do things like H index count?
That depends. So
it would be in the faculty of science, obviously.
It'll be at the faculty end that it might count, the department end. The SSCs don't really look into this. And then some faculties don't take this into consideration at all. So it's very discipline specific. Can I ask, I forgot, but if you're speaking, can you take the mic, because this session is being live streamed and I'm sure other people are interested in the questions. I apologize for having forgotten to do this earlier. Yeah.
Yes, my question is related to external reviewers. Like in terms of if it's emeritus professor, but best in the field, then also balance between Canadian and international, and also balance between university and government research organizations.
First one, emeritus, no problem. I mean, they have their reputation, that's just fine. Canadian versus international, there's no rule that you must have half in half or no Canadians or all Canadians. You need to choose people who are best able to judge you, regardless of where they are. However, I think the committee and the dean might be worried if they're all Canadians, because you're supposed to be demonstrating international reputation. So, but a mixture is just fine. Can you remind me what your third point was?
Government organizations versus universities.
Well, government, here this is would be very discipline specific. You know, what is your research about? Does it have, does some governmental organization have reason to be in a good position to judge it? If they are researchers with a government organization, again, this is just fine. You just need to explain in the justification why that person's name is appropriate. I don't, if you can hand the mic, there are lots of people at the top, or you can come down to the, there's a mic coming back, or use the mic that's in the, well, Lawrence, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. You said that the process in submitting the dossiers was meant to not to produce very, very huge dossiers. Do you have any guidelines on the preparation of that personal statement? Because if you're making your claim to international recognition, I could see you writing volumes and volumes on it, which then doesn't look any different than the tenure dossier, or it could be just two, three pager. So do you have any sense of what your expectations are in terms of the personal statement?
I don't think I can answer that question, because it's going to vary so much from individual to individual. It should not be a book. But two or three pages will be enough for some people, and won't. It's, you know, it seems to me it's more likely to be, if we're talking about everything that's going to be covered, it's more likely to be between 10 and 20 pages, maybe more. Bonnie, do you have a sense from the ones that are coming in how long the personal statements are?
I think it varies by faculty.
Yeah.
And that's something that maybe the faculty guidance
could do. Yes, yeah. So, sorry, that's not a very good answer, but I'll take it as something that we need to think about, yes. Robin, do you want to come down to the mic?
Yeah, Robin Yates, Chair of East Asian Studies. I have several questions, and it's probably because I'm not up with the latest regulations, but in previous years when I was on the SEC, there were only two areas, and now there are the three areas. So I assume that that has been changed from the past. And the second is, could you just review again the statutory committee? Because I was under the impression that in addition to the people whom you mentioned, that there was also a Senate representative and a member of the Board of Governors. The third issue is, the international reputation. And if your service is primarily in your organization within Canada, presumably that is not establishing yourself as an international scholar. And yet it might be, depending upon discipline specific, it might actually, be an international a reputation. So I have those questions. There are several others.
Okay, but, well, why don't I start with those?
But I'll stop there. Thank you.
I'm going to start with your second question. I did already, this is the list of people who'll be on the Statutory Selection Committee, and there are two members selected by Senate, and there's two members of the Board of Governors. So that has not changed. But you asked, having served on this committee in the past, about the criteria. Actually, the criteria always were that the committee should look at all three areas of academic duties. However, it is the case still and was that your research is the thing that the committee looks at first, your international reputation in research. So if I can just go back to... go back to the criteria. I can tell you how the committees work at the moment, which is that the committee first considers your research and your international reputation, and if it's agreed that you, so to speak, pass on that front, it then looks at teaching and service. So it's true that research and international reputation are, in some sense, the primary criterion or primary criteria. But the others, I think what's important to understand is that if you are a brilliant researcher and internationally recognized and you're a lousy teacher and you don't do anything in the way of service, your chances of promotion are not particularly high, because the committees do take all of these things into consideration. What was your third one? It was service. Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the letters are meant to address the first of these, right? So they are in support of the first criterion. So what you're pointing out is that you might have a major service role in your professional organization, which itself is international, and would letters address this or not? Let me say that as far as I can see from the regulations, and I know some departments do this, there's nothing to prevent a departmental committee for asking for other letters. The dean is going to ask for the ones that are on the list of six that will be considered by the dean and the statutory selection committee. But if somebody felt that it's important that the department understand their role, their service role, in some other way, I think it would be acceptable for them to solicit, or for the department chair to solicit a letter that says, this person does outstanding things in our professional organization, these are the kinds of things they do, et cetera, et cetera. So that would be a way of getting that kind of information forward. Any other questions? I don't know where the roaming mic has got to. Okay. Would you want to go first and then pass it forward?
I just have a question back on the evaluators. In terms of, do they need to be sort of at arm's length? Like my professional community, my international community is quite small. We edit journals together. We are on committees together, et cetera. So it's difficult to find someone who possibly isn't a colleague.
Right.
Do I just explain that?
Yes, I mean, coming from a field that's also fairly small, yeah. I understand your problem. Yes, I mean, I think you just have to explain that in the justification and try and choose people who are as at arm's length as possible, and then explain why greater arm's length is not possible. Yeah.
Okay, and one other question is, do the externals, do they receive all of the documents except for the book, et cetera, as you were saying, like the CV and the personal statement?
They would be getting the whole dossier.
The whole thing,
yes.
Okay.
And that's my understanding. I mean, this is done by deans, but are there any deans here?
No.
But yes, I think, but they're really being asked to assess the international reputation in research, so... it's unlikely that they're going to be commenting on other aspects.
Okay.
And especially if we are aiming for a one PDF file, mind you, the deans may not be getting it in that form, but if we're aiming for that all the way through, then they're necessarily going to get everything. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, it's gone back instead of forward. Yeah, okay.
Just a quick question regarding the personal statement, the balance between talking about your research as you do it versus bragging about how good you are.
Yeah.
What should that balance be?
You should certainly brag. You should brag. You should show. You should do both. I mean, but there are ways and ways of bragging, right? I mean, don't brag so much that it gets people really annoyed. But you definitely need to, point out, I am the world's expert in this. And you can see this by the number of conferences I've been invited to present this. So don't be afraid of bragging. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Could you pass it forward? Because there's somebody who's been waiting for a long time. No, forward.
Thank you very much. If I am allowed to ask two questions. So the first question is regarding the criteria, especially the record of excellence on the international stage. You had a slide where you listed specifics for it. And I wonder, practically, in real life, do you put end between all these lines, or it's like 3, 4, 5?
Yeah, it's a combination. Right? Yeah, sorry, yes, you do not have to have all of these. And some of you will have other things that will contribute. It's just, since people quite often ask us, I thought I would put everything that I could think of. But you certainly don't have to have all. But if you've only got one, then maybe you're not ready.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the second question, while I have the mic, I just wonder, we have at McGill new chairs, sometimes that come from different countries, and sometimes they're not aware of the process. And in my specific case, I went forward to speak to my chair, and he asked me why I'm in this department at all. So it was kind of discouraging start. But I wonder what kind of initiative you have to promote this knowledge to the newly recruited chair.
Natalie, would you like to answer this question? Pass the mic back.
We actually organized something called the Academic Leadership Forum. A number of the people in the room attend these. And they're usually held once a month. In some cases, they're for deans and associate deans. But this year, we've actually been focusing on chairs. And so we've actually just had 3 meetings. 2 were with associate professors asking what would be useful. And essentially, their top request was, could you please clarify the process? And so this particular event was organized. We also just last week had a meeting with department chairs talking about ways of supporting associate professors through the promotion to full professor and talking about the need for mentorship, clarifying and demystifying the process with them. So this is actually a complement to sessions we've been having with department chairs and directors as well. We can't force them to come. But we've definitely been speaking to them in that forum, and we are sending additional material and circulating it so that they have it at their disposal.
I'm an associate professor, and I'm preparing my dossier right now for promotion, and I'm also the chair of my department.
Wait, did you say you're associate or assistant?
I am an associate.
Okay, sorry. I heard assistant.
I'm an associate.
Okay, your chair. Yes, yes.
I'm the chair of my department at the same time. So this is just a technicality, but who steps in for me?
Yeah. I mean, this is interesting, and there are many of you in this situation, associate professors who are chairs. I have several suggestions, and Natalie may have some as well. First of all, I suggest you do talk to your dean, and the other thing is you need to set up your departmental promotion committee needs to be chaired by somebody other than yourself, obviously, and perhaps it would be wise for it to be a full professor to chair that committee, although I think it's not essential. But I think the other thing is if you have other chairs in your faculty that you know that are full professors, maybe talk to them first But I think you know it's always go one step up. So the person you should be discussing things with is your dean.
Related comment on that, about a third of the department chairs are associate professors, so you're in good company that way. So it's not only, I think, that you want to speak to somebody to hear about the process and to set it up without conflict of interest, but it's also that you want to be able to mentor people in your own department. And it's hard, if you're an associate professor, to mentor a colleague through the promotion process if you haven't been through that process yourself. So one of the things that's emerging is it's useful to identify senior faculty members who are particularly good mentors within the department and to draw upon them. But the other one that we're hearing more and more is it's really useful to find strong mentors in a sibling department, so a department that has a similar discipline. And quite often department chairs actually talk about finding mentors from other departments and finding that particularly useful.
Can we have the mic down here? Yes, it's coming to you.
I might have missed this, but for how many years are you allowed to accumulate information? I know you said it could take till 20 or 25, but with a 10-year application, it's 5 years.
Yeah. I didn't say anything. You didn't miss it, because I didn't say it, nor does it say anything in the regulations. It seems to me that promotion to full professor is you are demonstrating, in a sense, over a career that you have achieved certain things, and therefore you should go back as far as you want. There's certainly no 5-year restriction.
Right. Okay, it's me. Do you have any statistics on the success rate in the various faculties or overall? And then also, I know you said direct application to the statutory committee is very rare.
Yeah.
But do you have any, could you say something about the success rate on that route?
Okay, so I can't answer about success rate at the department or faculty level, because what happens is if your department or your faculty says no, this information is not shared upwards, right? So we do, and so for example, if you've tried 3 times, we wouldn't know this. Or if 10 people in your department have tried and 5 were unsuccessful, we don't know it. So we only know at the level of the statutory selection committee, and it's very rare. And the other route is very rare. When I say very rare, I mean for both the failure at the statutory selection committee and the route that goes straight to the principal, I think we're talking about 1 or 2 people in the last 10 or 20 years. It's really, really unusual. But the point is that for the second one, that way of doing it is available. I mean, I hope, but it's probably, my hope may be misplaced, I hope that people are able to go through their departments, but I think some people might just decide, well, I won't bother. So, you know, we also don't have any statistics on who has thought about it and decided, I'm not going to bother. And we're afraid that there are more people in that category than we would like. We're encouraging you to think about promotion. I think somebody behind you would like the mic. Yeah.
Hi there. I realise you can't talk about specifics on this, but just in relation to the 10-year criteria, I wonder if you could flesh out a little bit the expectations around teaching and supervision and those activities that we can label service or we do label service. Is there anything you can tell us there?
I don't know that there's anything I can say over and above the criteria for tenure. Or what in other words, you should demonstrate, as I said, we were not using terms like superior, but you should demonstrate, you know, strong performance in your undergraduate teaching, successful graduate supervision, this kind of thing, and service, you know, on university or departmental or faculty committees that is more than just nominal, you know, I'm I'm the person that sits on this committee and doesn't say anything. So in a way, those things, you've got to somewhat play it by ear, but it shouldn't be less than what you put forward for your tenure. Yeah. Okay. Robin, do you want to come down to...
Just a couple more of my the points. The first is, when I was on that committee, it was clear that the research really should be a program which is beyond that of the dissertation. So essentially, if you get the tenure, tenure is on your dissertation book or something like that, so that one would need to have established an independent research program that is extended well beyond that of the of the doctoral dissertation work. And the second thing is, with the teaching, it seemed as though it was always, you know, the not so much undergraduate teaching, but also graduate mm-hmm. teaching for training the next generation of researchers. So if you don't have that too many, you know, graduate students, that would be something that would be, you know, looked at rather carefully. The third point is the question that when we were looking at it before is that there seemed to be a bit of gender inequity in the promotion to full professors tended to be male for various reasons, and so I was wondering what programs, mentoring programs or others, the university is engaged in to try to encourage women to put themselves forward or to go on ahead to full professorship. And finally, on the unusual route, it is still the case that both the chair and the dean sit on the SEC, and okay. yet they would be individuals who have not endorsed the recommendation for promotion.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you could tell us what your thoughts on those
right.
points were.
Thank you. I'll start with the last, and then I'll ask Natalie to talk about the mentoring issue. We are very concerned, by the way, that more female professors should come forward, but Natalie will talk about what we're doing. But your second point is of considerable interest. That is to say, the Statutory Selection Committee consists of various people, and I checked in the statutes. The dean is mentioned as a member of the committee, but the chair is not. So, in my view, if we were faced with such a case, we would not have the department chair on that committee, and maybe we would add a couple of other professors not from the department, right? So that, because I fully appreciate the point you're making, that somebody has chosen the unusual route because they've got concerns about how they will be viewed in their department, then to have the chair on the committee just... So I'm not quite sure what to do about the dean because that's in the statutes. And we will face this problem when we have to. But I think... If it was a case where we knew that the dean would have supported the department in saying no, we would have to find some alternative so that the people on the Statutory Selection Committee are at least neutral, not negative, with respect to the candidate. But thank you for raising that point. And Natalie will talk about mentoring. See, she kept the mic.
It from the back. There's a two-part answer to this one. Last year, we actually organized three ALFs, which is the acronym for Academic Leadership Forum. We spoke with the deans about recruitment and equity issues at recruitment. So, for example, of shortlisted candidates, if there is no woman in the top three shortlisted candidates at the time of recruitment, then a committee is asked to interview a female candidate as long as they qualified in the top 10. So part of promoting the issue of promoting women is actually hiring women. And in some faculties, our numbers are weaker than others at the hiring stage. And so we'll see that coming through. We'll see the ripple effect. We also, as well as speaking to the deans, we spoke to chairs about equity issues last year. And we held a special ALF, actually, for academic administrators who were women, speaking about women's leadership issues. And that was really the first time the issue of a bottleneck towards promotion that came up for us. And we were also hearing some reasons why associate professors weren't putting themselves forward as full professors. And quite often it was something as simple as, it's a lot of work and I wouldn't, you know, I'd feel awkward if it wasn't accepted in the first round. So it was really just a sensitizing people to the normal process of moving towards full professor as an academic. This year we will be organizing an ALF on equity in particular, and that's actually, I think, in February at this point, yes. Lydia. Yeah. And so Lydia will be one of the key people working with us on that. And then towards the end of the year, we're leading to a definition of the department chair at McGill. Because if you actually look through the regulations, you'll see that the department chair is described as the person who assigns academic duties. But there are very few additional descriptions of what a department chair does. And those of you in the room who are department chairs might tell us that you do other things as well.
Any other questions? Can we have the mic back over here?
Yes, I'd just like to ask a little bit more about like the teaching and service that was asked before, in that I know my colleagues who have very kindly given me all of their dossiers, they went ahead and had all sorts of teaching indicators like course evaluations, et cetera, et cetera. So this is not, when you say no teaching dossier, then what you mean is basically we don't need to do that. But how do we bring that into it?
Yeah. The answer is sort of yes and no. So first of all, just be a bit cautious about looking at previous dossiers because they were all prepared under the old regulations, right? So no, I think that in your teaching statement, you may indeed still want to talk about the course evaluations and give it. This is why it's useful to look at the new guidelines on teaching dossiers, even though you aren't being asked to prepare it in that way, where we really try and limit what tenure candidates, let alone anybody else, put into the teaching dossier. So yes, tables with your, comparing your scores on course evaluations are fine, but what we do not want is, you know, a whole set of evaluations from students. I mean, so you can include that kind of thing in your teaching statement, and you can even have a small appendix to the teaching statement with the relevant tables, but don't feel that you've got to put as much as your colleagues felt they had to put, because in the previous regulations it said you must have a teaching dossier. Right, so, but certainly you want the committees to know that this is my reputation in teaching. Here's how I've been performing. Just don't feel that you've got to now overload it with sort of supplementary material backing up. Do not, for example, give course outlines, which is something that people used to do. But talking about your course evaluations, yes, that's still, I think, a valid thing to do in your statement.
So that would go in the personal statement?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's why it's difficult to say how long the personal statement should be, because you may have a long section on each duty, or longer on one and shorter on the other. Okay. But that's where you could put it, yes.
Thank you.
Can you pass it forward?
If you've been postponing submitting a dossier for many years, do you have to explain why?
No. In my view, it's only your business. It's a curious thing that sometimes at the level of the SSC, they do sometimes comment on why has this person taken so long, but that's not really what they're supposed to assess. They're supposed to assess you. As you are presenting yourself and as other people see you, and the fact that you've chosen to delay, and many people have many people have good reasons to delay. Now, if you think it would help in the assessment, then feel free to say something, but you're not obliged to. Any other questions or comments? If not, thank you for coming. Let me remind you, this will be the live stream will be available for 2 years. And I'll post the slides.